Amor armado a sí mismo debe ser, a quien ame a los hombres, guerrillero lo han de ver. A quien ame a los hombres, guerrillero lo han de ver. Nos hablan de paz los que matan a los niños, tiran napalm sobre el pueblo de Vietnam. Creo en la paz entre los hombres, pero esta paz sin hambre debe ser.
And hello, if you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Y que a los gorilas les gusta bendecir. Creo en el amor entre los hombres, pero a este amor armado lo atarán. A veces yo pienso lo lindo que ha de ser darle a los yanquis como les dio el Che. Sépanlo todos, esta guerra es de verdad.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
First motion stated that the Oglala Sioux people will use this document to revive the Treaty of 1868 and that it will be the basis for all negotiations. Second motion, that the declaration be made that we are a sovereign nation by the Treaty of 1868.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man come in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Pages in the history of the white man's dealings with the Indians, and many parts of the record are stained with the greed and avarice of those who have thought only of their own profit. But it is also true that the purposes and motives of this great government and of our nation as a whole toward the red men have been wise, just, and beneficent. The remarkable progress of our Indian brothers toward civilization is proof of it. and open to all to see. During the past half century, you have seen the schoolhouse take the place of the military post on your reservations. The administration of Indian affairs has been transferred from the military to the civil arm of the government. The education and industrial training the government has given you has enabled thousands of Indian men and women to take their places in civilization alongside their white neighbors. Thousands are living in substantial farmhouses on their own separate allotments of land. Hundreds of others have won places of prominence in the professions, and some have worked their way into the halls of Congress and into places of responsibility in our state and national governments. 30,000 Indian children are enrolled in government, state, and mission schools. The Great White Father now calls you his brothers, not his children. Because you have shown in your education and in your settled ways of life staunch, manly, worthy qualities of sound character.
Internet radio for smarter original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the fourth world from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News Thought and Analyses, concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. You know, we might have to shorten that list. But, you know, we're trying to be specific in why we think the world is fucked up, right? Well, hey, in any case, welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the entire original family in this time of strife and struggle and all of the honest Caucasians out there. You know, we're not limiting anybody here, but really, we're here to talk to our own people. And, you know, we thank you for allowing us to be ourselves. I'm your host, Angry Indian, and I'm here, as always, with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. Yeah, we got a pretty good interview coming up in the second half with Professor Jeff Korntassel, who's been on before. We're going to talk about what's been going on in New Brunswick and Mi'kmaq territory. We're going to talk about missing Indigenous women. We're going to talk about the new, you know, Indigenous nationhood movement. And we're going to talk about how the Indigenous people, as a nation, you know, drop the tribal thing for a bit. You know, that's your culture. Nobody ever told you to get rid of that. But, you know, you're an Indian first when you're dealing with non-natives. So, you know, politically, be conscious of that. Well, we're going to talk about these things and some of the, pertinent information. And, I don't know what else to talk about right now other than what's been happening in the news. You know, what's been happening in the news? Well, you know, Marisha McBride, we already know what's up with that. We already know what's up with the McBride case. This cat has been charged with second-degree murder, and he's already out on bail. And we also know now that George Zimmerman Jr., I believe, has been taken into custody, and he's out on bail after pulling a shotgun on his girlfriend. So, you know, in this particular case, at least for right now, he's not allowed to possess any firearms. We don't know for how long, who the hell knows for how long, because it didn't take too long after the Trayvon Martin fiasco for him to start touring shotgun factories, right? And hanging out with actor Steven Seagal, who's also a part-time sheriff. I don't know how you do that. And he's hanging out there with Serve Gerald Pyle. So, you know, this is the crowd that George Zimmerman has been surrounding himself with. You would think he would just want to lay low. You would just think he want to lay low and just chill out and not bother with anyone, not want to be recognized, grow a long beard, you know, move. You know, you would think he would just move, you know, just go away. Just go away. You know, find a cabin someplace. You know, go, just go away. You know, go to, I don't know, where there are people who think just like him, who are concentrated and isolated and have so, you know, it's just them out there. And they don't have to harm anybody else. What do you say, Idaho? Yeah, but see, but if you say Idaho, you know, because, yeah, I know, because people are touchy in Idaho. You know, I was in Moscow, Idaho a couple of years back, and, you know, folks were upset to even mention anything about white supremacy in Idaho, because the World Church of the Creator, and they had the whole compound there that Morris D's and the Southern Poverty Law Center ended up winning in a dispute. I can't remember the details right now. It involved an attack. But in any case, you know, they were sued and they lost. So they end up losing everything up there, and I don't know where they went after that. But, you know, the entire Pacific Northwest, man, is white supremacists. So, you know, I mean, there's little towns all over the place. I'm sure that if George Zimmerman really wanted to hide out, really wanted to lay low, really just wanted to, you know, remove himself from the society in which he has added to its ruin, you would think that he would just, you know, get a cabin, you know, find some woman who's stupid enough to be with him, and just go there, and he could play in the woods and do whatever the hell, you know, be act all macho, do whatever the hell he wants to do, and you know, not be a threat to anybody. But see, no. See, the jury said that, you know, they had to do what they had to do, and the judge had to do what he had to do or she had to do, and you know, it ended up what. You know, he's at it again. He's at it again. There's another teenager here. I believe he's 14. He's been tasered in the face. Now, yeah, his mother said he was shoplifting. I mean, you know, his mama is pretty honest about this entire thing. She said, yeah, he was shoplifting. And he was totally wrong. And if you're going to take him in, okay, take him in. But if you look at a photograph of what they did to this youth's face, man, he was already handcuffed, and they tasered him in the face. Not once, not twice, but repeatedly. Repeatedly. And speaking of black youth, there's another brother. This is all over the international press now. I mean, you can go to Russia Today and find this. Which, you know, I'm going to say this again, it's pretty goddamn embarrassing when you have to, you know, as an indigenous person, as an African man, you know, in the U.S., in Canada, in Mexico for that goddamn matter, and you have to go to Russian and Iranian state news services to find out information about abuses towards your people in your own goddamn country. You know, it kind of makes you feel like, you know, I mean, it's just a really strange. I mean, we're having a very strange conversation. You know, it's like a Radio Free Europe, Radio Havana, you know, what have you. It's almost the same goddamn thing. Here it is, you're living right wherever the hell it is you're, you know, whatever black goddamn ghetto you're living in, where you know, black people are just being stomped on repeatedly, right? If you're not being rejected care at the hospital, you got police abuse. If you're not being rejected from housing, right, then you got unemployment discrimination. Then you got employment goddamn discrimination. So, you know, you got insurance discrimination. Every time you turn around, there's always somebody trying to, you know, prevent you, to block you from enjoying what is naturally, what is by law, what people have been lynched for, right? Your rights. Your rights. You know, these are not privileges that you had to do something to earn. These are privileges and rights you earned by being born here. And the fact that black men and women have struggled for these. Not because the white man has done you any favors. This is what you're due. This is what you are due. You are due respect. And if that, you know, isn't good enough for you, and you still have to look to a white man for some validation for this, Then look at international goddamn law. 1948 Convention on the Punishment and Prevention of Genocide. Read about Raphael Lemkin. Read about the convention in 1948 after World War II on what genocide is and what it isn't. It's an international law. And indigenous people in the Americas, and African people in the Americas, and some Asians in the Americas qualify. We have not suffered genocide. We are continuing to suffer a genocide. Tasering young black men in the face. And this other young man that I'm getting ready to bring up, like I said, you can go to RT.com, Russia Today, any of their various portals out here on the net, and you'll hear about a young man, a black man, it's all over the black net as well, a black man, 3 years he spent in prison, a majority of that time in solitary, because you know they're just looking for any reason at all to put people in solitary, right? Well, you know, some people anyway, right? He was arrested at 16 on the accusation of a robbery that supposedly had happened a fortnight beforehand. He never went to trial. He never saw a judge. They held him for 3 years. And then somebody continued to press on his case and they finally ended up releasing him. He was never charged. He was never even charged. Of course he is African. Because who else does that happen to other than Indian people in the United States? Who else does that happen to? And in Canada. Who else does that happen to? Yes, poor whites get caught up out there. But they get so caught up on being white and the idea of white privilege that if you're from Appalachia, that if you're from, you know, Cracker, Florida, what have you, you don't enjoy that kind of white privilege. So this is why I don't understand why you're not, you know, siding with us. You know, it's like, here it is. They will do this to you. And if you think ABC, NBC, CBS, you know, whatever, you know, these goddamn alphabet soup corporate-owned media centers, they're not going to come down there to Appalachia to speak to some poor guy, right, who lived in a cabin somewhere up in West Virginia, who's, you know, lost everything through coal mining, lost everything through mountaintop removal. The water's bad. The land is bad. He can't work anywhere because his health is so goddamn bad, right? And he's about to lose his liver because, yeah, he drinks. Because what else is he to do? So you blame him for trying to cope, right? And yeah, we can talk about the stereotype of the toothless, you know, hillbilly. But hey, man, they treat them the same way they treat us. And see, I don't have a problem with these people. But see, the problem is when you start to think that you're better than me. If they're doing this to us, they do this to you too. The only time that they see you as being white is when it comes against going against us. So yeah, you know, it's in the news, but you know, see that aspect of it, that dynamic of it isn't in the news, and the black elites are not mentioning this. I mean, Oprah said something here that was pretty, guess who's coming to dinner, you know, sort of dialogue. You know, she goes, yeah, when the old races die out, then, you know, this is when everything will straighten out. Well, that's not true, of course. You know, that's not true. I mean, some of the most vicious racism I'm seeing today is from young people. You know, and it's a combination of a lot of things. I mean, what do you call him, Lupe? Your husband. He's trying to explain to me that whole millennial thing. Because, you know, I mean, I understand what it looks like on paper when I read it in the news story. But, yeah, you know, I mean, they just have no patience. You know, they have no patience for anything. They don't understand when they come onto a job now, why they can't be a manager or a CEO within 4 months. They don't understand that. You know, they don't understand the process of, you know, maturing and learning and going through the cycle, right? They don't see old people. Old people nowadays get all kinds of surgery so that they try to look younger when they really look, you know, freakish. But they're trying to look younger. I mean, there's nothing wrong with trying to, you know, look your best. But there's a difference between trying to look your best and somebody who's 74, who's spending thousands of dollars and getting all kinds of stuff put in her or his face trying to look 40. That's ridiculous. And so, you know, when they grow up now, and I mean, there's a lot of confusion. Look at people in the struggle here with AIDS. Because I know we don't talk about that in the black community very much. You know, look at the struggle about that. Folks are not really, you know, they're not, you know, finding, you know, getting a negative diagnosis and then 3 or 4 months, they're dead. You know, it's not like the 80s anymore, right? You know, people are living full lives, they're getting married, they're having kids. You know, I mean, they're able to maintain, you know, they found a way to maintain it. They can level it off. And they've got things down to one pill now for you know, some people at least. And they're able to maintain. They're able to keep their jobs. They're able to, you know, maintain, you know, their quality of life, which is a damn good thing. But, you know, to a lot of young folks, well, that just means then I'm never going to die. You know, they take all of these, they make a combination of all of these things and the, you know, total personal connectivity of iPhones, email, instant messaging, you know, all of this type of stuff. You know, nobody knows how to talk to each other anymore. You know, a normal discourse is really difficult, especially when you're talking to somebody under 25. It's difficult. They don't know how to communicate. You know, it seems like everybody's goddamn suffering from Asperger's syndrome. You know, I mean, I see grown men, grown fucking men in their mid-30s. You know, I mean, I don't understand this. You know, when do grown men stop wearing trainers? You know, when do you put on a proper pair of shoes? I don't understand this. I don't understand this. The music is becoming juvenile. The dress with adults is becoming juvenile. The conversation amongst adults is becoming juvenile. And I'm watching this happen to African people. I'm watching this happen to indigenous people as well. And it seems to be the more acculturated we are, the more that, you know, we're sinking psychologically, spiritually, culturally, and what have you, with the mainstream society. As they go down, we're going down with it. We're not now knowing how to communicate with each other. We're not understanding anymore how to, you know, be able to connect with that other native or that other African person on the other side of the road and see brother and see sister and see a unity and see a commonality and see an understanding. And when that black person and that native person sees each other, that they see a comrade. Because, see, if we were thinking like that, what happened to this young brother who was tasered in the face? What happened to this brother who did 3 years for absolutely no goddamn reason, no good goddamn reason? His life, his lawyer is saying that his mental faculties are fucked up now. He's going to suffer, obviously, PTSD for the rest of his life. He was beaten by guards and by goddamn inmates. He went in there to you, so you can just imagine what the fuck happened to him. There's no excuse for this, and there's no excuse for the Justice Department, which is being led now by a black man, who we also have to remember used to work for Chiquita Banana, right? United Fruit, when they were using mercenaries against indigenous people in South America. You know, he worked out the legal deal that they just paid a fine. They paid a fine, and then everybody forgot about the fact that all these indigenous people had their lives ruined. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody cared at the time. And nobody cares now. So why am I surprised that he's not saying anything about the wholesale, you know, basically slaughter every 28 hours of black youth in this country? And, you know, these two young men survived. How many of them are not surviving? Now, if you heard the last show, you know, that it was a pretty, you know, long-ranging and very deep discussion with Fanonian and Post-Racial My Ass. These are both two Twitter accounts that I feel you should follow. And, you know, we were trying to touch on this. You know, if we had our act together, what happened to these two young men, our future would not have happened. Now, you know, with indigenous people, you know, I'm not saying, and don't take me out of context with this, that there's nothing happening in the United States. On the grand scale, no, there is nothing happening in the United States. I'm sorry. People get offended, but point to me a mass movement. See, you can't. And then if I say the American Indian movement, then you get a whole bunch of squealing, right? So, you know, and then even amongst them. You know, autonomous, not autonomous, incorporated, right? You know, I mean, it's just a whole fucking clusterfuck. Now, look, we all know about COINTELPRO. We all know why we didn't get it together. So now that we know that, we need to get it together. Now, I don't know more, you know, it started something. So now you have the Indigenous Nationhood Movement. It's new. They have a platform. They have a statement of principles, and you need to go check it out at nationsrising.org. And we're going to talk about that later when we speak to Professor Jeff Korntassel. But, you know, this is the beginning of something. And Canada, the First Nations of North America, of the northernmost part to North America, the Great White North, okay, they're leading the way. They're leading the way. The Zapatistas gave us the platform. Right? So, you know, we need to start to do the research on what indigenism really means. We have to study our own history. Not just so that, you know, when we get on radio shows and when we write, you know, papers and what have you, we can, you know, be correct in our quote. No. So that we can use that data to formulate the action that needs to be done to protect ourselves, to maintain ourselves, and to make ourselves sustainable. So that our people have something in which to grow on. So, you know, when I talk about what's happening with Zimmerman and, you know, these young men and Renisha McBride and Jonathan Farrell, you know, I mean, I'm doing this, you know, white people, you know, they call it bitching. Really? You know, I really find that funny how, you know, white folks call the African people who, and, you know, and the non-African people. There's a lot of white people that are concerned about this too. You know, saying that, you know, we're complaining, we're bitching, you know, really, all of y'all can kiss my beautiful brown ass. Why don't you tell a Jew that they're complaining when they say never again? See, my argument is, it's time for the black man and for the indigenous man and woman in America, in the Americas. It's time for the black and brown, you know, person in the Americas to start saying never again. It's time for the African to start saying never again. It's time for the Indian to start saying never again. Never again. This is the Angry Indian. When we come back, we will be speaking with Professor Jeff Korntassel about Mi'kmaq territory and the movement to get the indigenous nations in the Americas back on their feet. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
This afternoon, and we see black, Latino, everybody all together. In 2008, there seems to be a real emphasis, even in New York, to try and keep black and brown divided. What's that about? And talk about the type of unity that we've had for so long.
Well, you know, ever since Columbus landed here, ever since we were brainwashed and put labels on Dominican, Puerto Rican, etc. Ever since that, we've been dealing with this nonsense. So it's not a new phenomenon. It's a case of not knowing knowledge of self. Once you know knowledge of self, you know that we all have a common bond. Okay? There's only one race, and that's the human race. So in some way, shape, or form, we are all related.
Okay.
Okay? So on top of that, you know, it's not so much a matter of race or what have you. It's a matter of a class system that has been established.
Well, that's real talk right there,
and
class.
That's what separates us. It's more an economic sort of enslavement mentality, you know, because you have white people that are also dirt broke, are not really thrilled with what the government's doing, and so we have a common bond.
Right.
And just because they're Caucasian, that doesn't really mean nothing. They like to have their shindigs and what have you, and have fun and you know, stomp around in the barn the same way we like to do it in the plazas and the PJs. You know what I mean?
Right.
So really, I mean, it's a matter of knowing who you are. Like for us, you know, I thank Africa Bambaataa because he was always into teaching knowledge itself. For a lot of us Zulus, you know, we started to realize that through his teachings and through other great teachers we've had, we learned that, for instance, Kuba is a Taino word. They kept the name Kuba. You know, Jamaica, that's a Taino word. There were Tainos running through those islands.
Taino Indians,
yes, indigenous people of these islands, of the so-called West Indian Islands in the Caribbean. So, you know, once you start breaking down these barriers and you start finding out that we are the same mixture, you know, even with our Arab brothers, you know, you see some cats in these grocery stores from Yemen, and you feel like speaking Spanish to them because you think they're Puerto Rican or like Dominican.
Right.
And meanwhile, they look exactly like we do. Why? Because the Moors were in Spain for 800 years.
That's real.
You heard?
Right.
So, I mean, you could get deeper and deeper into the roots of history, and you'll find that there is very little difference between us or among us, you know, and the dots could get connected until the beginning of time, you know.
Right.
So that's what's up for me. You know, I encourage people to learn about yourself, learn about your culture, learn true history, not only what you learn in school, but challenge what you learn in school.
Internet radio for smarter original.
You're curious or confused? Get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Tansetoya kakioni wakuma kantik. Winston Watininia, Miksuachi, Saskatchewan, Neotsian.
I am Winston Watini. I am from Mik, Saskatchewan. Knowledge is power. We must gather knowledge to protect our children, our culture, our future. Learn the ways you can protect yourself and others from infection and spreading HIV. Teach others what you have learned. Together, we can make a difference.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that prevents pregnancy. It is not an abortion pill and does not cause an abortion, only the prevention of pregnancy. If you have had unprotected sex or have been raped and need Plan B, contact your local Indian Health Service. You have a legal right to receive Plan B over the counter, meaning without a prescription or a doctor's appointment if you are 17 or older. Plan B must be taken within 72 hours of sexual intercourse to be effective. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Pulp Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
This is FSR reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression, and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And the Democrats are throwing the election away. For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman that was running for president. I'm no second-class citizen. And goddamn the Democrat.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. A lot of you have heard me complain, especially those who know me personally in my personal life, heard me complain about what's going on up in Canada. Up in New Brunswick. I mean, the entire thing is happening coast to coast in Canada, but you know, right now we're focused on New Brunswick in terms of fracking, in terms of the authorities there pulling, ridiculous amounts of weaponry on peaceful protesters, elders, you know, families with their children. These are people trying to protect their land under the treaty, because there's been a lot of discussion on both sides of the gate over here about who the land actually belongs to. And like in most of these cases, especially in Canada, something I cannot particularly say for the law of 48, but in Canada, no one ever ceded land to anybody, ever. And we know the Canadian state is going to do what they're going to do, and they're trying to get everybody focused on the Toronto Ford cocaine scandal, which is a scandal. But what's more important, a Tory who was snorting cocaine, or the fact that they sent more than 700 police officers, if you want to call them police officers, because they look like soldiers to me. They sent more than 700 RCMP personnel to a town of a little more than 800 over a Texas company that is fracking and destroying the environment of New Brunswick. And I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, LC Potag territory. A peaceful protest. They have every right to discuss about what is being done in their territory. They never ceded land to anyone. You know, so they will do this. In the meantime, we have more than 600, some say 1,000, missing Indigenous women. Where is the RCMP when it comes to this? Well, it seems that they're nowhere. When it comes to defending the rights of Indigenous people, they're nowhere. On either side of the gate, North America, and I'm including Mexico in this as well. When it comes to defending the rights of Indigenous people, these authorities are nowhere. And then they get surprised when something like the Indigenous Nationhood Movement, you know, pops up. But let me explain something to you. Nothing pops up unless you push it down. Things grow. But something pops up. This is the language I'm hearing. It popped up. We don't know where this is coming from. It sounds like the American Indian movement. Oh, we don't know where this is coming from. Nothing pops up unless you push it down. So, you know, we can go through the colonial thing. I'm like the Dalai Lama. You know, even if China left Tibet today, Tibet will never be old Tibet. We can never go back. But, you know, this nonsense about we don't understand why the Indians are angry, because that is the way that this story has been reported. And, you know, we heard from the stimulator. He was up there. He told us what happened the last time we had him on. Now we have Jeff Korntassel. Now, we've had Professor Korntassel on before. He's a professor up in Victoria, I believe. He's a Cherokee, member of the Cherokee Nation. And he is part of the Indigenous Nationhood Movement, which you can find more information at nationsrising.org. I want you to go check it out while you're listening to the show. And Jeff, welcome back to
Thanks for having me on.
I'll see you. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of things happening up in Canada right now. And if you can just give us, you know, especially as an educator, your particular perspective on what is happening, what's causing it, and what Indigenous people are doing to address it, that'd be the best way for us to get going.
Sure. Yeah, there's so much going on, it's hard to keep track. And I think you put it in the larger context in your earlier talk there. I mean, it's, you know, we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of Idle No More. And folks have been, you know, nothing just pops up overnight. You know, there's a reason for these mobilizations right now. And we're seeing it not just in New Brunswick, but we're seeing it elsewhere. Fort Nelson First Nation, we're seeing it in different places around, you know, around the country, where folks are rising up to protect their territory and protect their waters from the Harper legislation, you know, which is basically taken away or stripped the ability of folks to protect their water and to protect their territory. You know, this whole fleet of Harper legislation now is going after education and basically taking away kind of an Indigenous autonomy over our ability to educate our own people. So it's a long time coming. And I think, you know, in the broader perspective, we're seeing an increased militarization of natural resources, right? For lack of a better term. Yeah. They're militarizing our territories. And, you know, you think about, the over 600, murdered and missing Indigenous women, and how little time has been spent and effort has been spent to resolve that or to even investigate those crimes. And yet how much money has been spent so far just in defending a corporate entity and their ability to frack Mi'kmaq territory.
An entity that isn't even Canadian.
Yeah, exactly. It's coming up from the U.S. And so, you know, we saw this in Burnt Church, you know, in 99. Where DFO, Department of Fisheries, spent over $100,000 to prevent Indigenous people, you know, at that point, Mi'kmaq people too, from fishing on their traditional territory, right? Over $100,000 is spent to prevent people from doing what is their natural livelihood. And yet, when we talk about actual criminal acts, like murder and missing Indigenous women, like protecting Indigenous people, or, you know, even advocating for Indigenous people from encroachment onto our territory, absolutely nothing is being done. So the larger context is, as I see it, the Indigenous Nationhood Movement kind of comes out of these discussions, but it's really just the latest generational moment, you know, where people have reinterpreted our struggles, you know, from, and this came out of our Indigenous Leadership Forum that is run by Taiyage Alfred and Jared Martineau, came out of this Indigenous Leadership Forum, but it's really a youth kind of oriented movement. It's an activist oriented movement, one of several, right? So it's just the latest incarnation of Indigenous struggles and the latest interpretation of what we need to do or what we feel we need to do to honor our responsibilities as Indigenous people.
All right, well, let me ask you this, being that I'm from the lower 48, the American Indian Movement. Now, a lot of people have heard the name, they've heard of AIM. Hopefully, possibly they've heard of Leonard Peltier, who still sits in a federal prison for basically standing on the rights, the treaty rights of indigenous people in North America. And I'm including Canada that as well, because AIM did include Canada and Mexico as part of this struggle.
Right.
Looking at the history of the American Indian Movement and what happened to Leonard Peltier, what happened to Anamaya Quash, even what happened to Ray Robinson Jr., and the history of COINTELPRO and the Guardians of the Oglala Nation, otherwise known as the Goon Squad, who were being backed. There was a private army of Dick Wilson, who was the tribal chair of the Lakota Nation at that time. How does that history reflect, and say, in the Oka Crisis? You know, how does that history reflect on what the nationhood movement is looking at addressing today?
I think it shows how our struggles really haven't changed that much in terms of, you know, we're still focusing on protecting the land. And I think AIM movement was all about that. And it, you know, it was protecting treaty rights, which is what we're talking about as well. So we're still talking about the same things. And we're still talking about abolishing colonial laws and systems. We're still talking about, you know, restitution for the theft of our lands, you know, protecting land and water. Yeah, I see it as a continuation of that struggle. You know, you look at AIM in the 70s, you know, it comes out of the Native Youth Movement of the 1960s, and that comes out of the fish-ins of the 1950s and 60s up here in the Northeast, or sorry, Northwest, you know, where folks were fishing, and it was illegal to fish in their own territory. So, and, you know, that comes out of, you know, that, you know, an even deeper struggle against the termination of indigenous nations in the 1950s. So, you know, you can see that legacy of struggle continuing. And I think what we, what I've seen with indigenous nationhood movement is it's a rearticulation of these same old principles of defending our territory and reoccupying indigenous homelands. So, yeah, I think in the case of AIM and then OCA, and I always like seeing those things tied together because they're all part of the same struggle. If you look at AIM, you look at OCA, 1990s, and you look at the Zapatista uprising in 1994, those are all part of the same struggle, just different periods in time. And so what we're trying to do is really reach out to other folks. And not just as an umbrella organization, because I think that'll be doomed to fail if that's all we are. We're looking to reach out to folks and find ways to localize those struggles. So, and provide assistance to folks that need it on the ground.
Okay, so right now, as everything is, as it stands, we're still, you know, in the discussion phases. What sort of resistance have you seen from the powers that be so far, now that they realize that they have a new movement that is basically, you know, right under their nose, that is standing on treaties? And I know there has to be a certain, well, not a certain level of concern, but a definite level of concern, because one, I am aware of this, and like most people who are Native or First Nations in Canada are aware of this, but not too many people outside of Canada know that the Canadian government basically looks at every First Nations person within their territories as a potential terrorist. There was a leak that came through the RCMP, and that this is the basic attitude. And then when we had certain nations send representatives to Iran recently for a conference, in which the Iranian government made sure that Press TV, that their media agency, made sure that the world knew that indigenous people in Canada, and for the most part throughout all of North America, are being denied their basic human and territorial rights under treaty, under international law, and under the federal and state laws in which they reside. So when we look at and see now that the United States is at odds with Iran, which means that Canada is at odds with Iran, and when First Nations leaders go to Iran to express their grievances, you know, what level does that bring the entire struggle to in terms of what's happening in the 21st century?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, like you, so, you said it so well, it's just that increased criminalization of Native people. And, you know, we saw it with the West Coast Warrior Society out here. The West Coast Warrior Society disbanded around 2005, and it was basically because of that criminalization of its members. And they actually took down two of its members on the Burrard Bridge out in Vancouver. You know, they were carrying hunting rifles. They had permits for all of them. They took them down on the bridge. They confiscated all that. And basically the movement was disbanded shortly after that due to threats and intimidation. So, and they were actually, it was part of an anti-terror task force that was put on these folks for teaching folks in their communities to hunt. And so that form of criminalization is still there. And I think we haven't seen any, you know, I think our movement is definitely being monitored and watched at this point. We haven't seen anything overt yet, but, you know, we did have an action in May where we reclaimed, Pecals, and Pecals is formerly known as Mount Doug, which is named after the first governor of British Columbia and a person who was basically responsible for negotiating 14 treaties, which were really, as he saw them, were land conveyances driven by the Hudson Bay Company, right? So a corporate entity, just like we're seeing in Mi'kmaq territory, a corporate entity is driving these treaties in order to promote the conveyance or the taking of Indigenous land. And so we did a reenactment of the treaty signing, which, by the way, the chiefs up at the top of that mountain of Pecals, they signed a blank piece of paper, right? And it was filled in later by the colonial authorities. So we reenacted that, but also we installed a sign. And that gave some of the history of that area. And that sign was taken down a few weeks ago by the municipality, but we've since had it reinstalled. We didn't ask for permission to put that sign up, and we've had it reinstalled. But that, as I see it, is just a first step of reclaiming territory. And, you know, what if we were to shut off that whole mountain, shut down that mountain to the public so that folks could engage in their ceremonies up at the top of that mountain? And, you know, at the time of the reclamation, we had about 3,000 to 4,000 followers and supporters. So the question becomes, would we have that same amount of support if we were to do that, if we were to shut it down and have Indigenous people who are from the territory engage in their, you know, their spiritual practices up at the top of that mountain? So, you know, it's beyond just a name reclaiming. It's about reoccupying that territory. And I think that's where it's going to get really closely monitored, but also it's going to get contentious.
Well, it's already pretty contentious in terms of the level of concern. Instead of negotiating with Native people and saying, okay, well, look, you know, this was done, this happened, okay, you know, let's just talk and work things out. You know, to come in so heavy-handed. You know, yeah. if this was happening with another state that Canada was not getting along with, there would be calls for, you know, international investigations, international tribunals, right? That they would demand that the world press condemn what is happening. What is the attitude in terms of all, or really, let me say, what is the cognizance politically in an international scale, in speaking in terms of the fourth world outside of Canada with this movement? Why isn't the United Nations, say, brought into to these discussions for the simple fact that the Special Rapporteur just said that Canada is violating the rights of Indigenous people?
But no. Yeah, and I think, you know, we've just had three different visits, right, from international observers from the UN to Canada in the last 6 months or so, including James Anaya, and has basically said there's a problem in Canada. And I don't know how much more clearly he can state that. You know, I think there's a huge awareness, because especially among Indigenous folks throughout the Americas, that you know, Canada's always been looked at as kind of the peacemaker, you know, all this mythology of Canada as a diplomatic country. And so beginning to shatter the myths that folks may have had about Canada and the perceptions that folks may have had about Canada as a peaceful country. It's a violent country. And just like a lot of other countries, their priorities are about fracking the land. Their priorities are about exploiting the land, whether it's for the Enbridge pipeline or Line 9 or, you know, the Kinder Morgan expansion. All of those things are interrelated. BC has a phrase, open for business. This is a place that is signaling that they're open for business regardless of indigenous, claims to the land, regardless of indigenous protections and defense of their territory. And so, you know, they've shown who they're siding with. And I always think of this in the larger picture, you know, when states are confronted with these kinds of conflicts, all they have for legitimacy is repression, powers of repression and, you know, coercion. That's all they have because they don't have a legitimate right to be here on our territory. And so we're seeing it in Mi'kmaq territory, you know, 700 RCMP to confront a peaceful demonstration. And, you know, we're seeing it elsewhere. You know, we see it on a day-to-day basis with the Department of Fisheries and monitoring indigenous fishing along the Fraser River or along else, you know, all sorts of places around Canada where they're actually preventing indigenous folks from practicing their livelihoods. So all that effort is being made to prevent us from having access to our territories, from having access to our waterways. And, yeah, you have to wonder, well, it's pretty clear where the priorities are.
Well, the other thing about that is, and I'm surprised that you didn't mention this, is the genocide aspect under international law, because not allowing First Nations people who have an ancestral tradition of fishing, you basically just destroyed their culture. I mean, in many cases, the religion itself comes from these practices. So how can we bring that to the international arena and actually start to do, as nations do, to bring these claims, complaints, grievances to the World Court, to the United Nations Security Council? When are we able, how can we legally start to move to that point?
Yeah, and I'm not as optimistic about the legal aspect, but I think you're right. I think it's useful to do that, especially on just to convey to the rest of the world that this is happening. I think the best openings are, especially for Canada, are the Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. So CERD, Canada's a signatory to that, and that is a great place to start. Although you can't invoke necessarily genocide there. So again, you're limited, right? In terms of other places, the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights has really been, I think, a promising venue internationally for upholding, indigenous claims against the state and indigenous protections against the state. The problem with that, even with the victories that they've had, for indigenous peoples, is the implementation. So the implementation has been slow to non-existent in places like Nicaragua, for example, and other places where there have been victories for indigenous peoples. But yeah, I think genocide, you know, we can't even get, I don't know if you heard about this, but the Canadian Museum on Human Rights will not even acknowledge that residential schools were genocide, were acts of genocide. So we can't even get that acknowledgement in a museum on human rights, ironically. And they said that they need proof from an outside body, basically. So they need an outside certifying body to state it in order for them to actually acknowledge that it's genocide. So I think it starts with, you know, with that educational angle of, you know, this is, how can you not say something is genocide when you're denying people their right to be on their territory, when you're taking kids away from families? It's clearly genocide. So yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I think it's important to to raise these at every instance. But those two forums, the CERD and the Inter-American Commission, I see as the most promising. I don't see the permanent forum really able to take this up because they're mainly an advisory function. And then Security Council will never take this up because, we're not going to be recognized as states, anytime soon. So, and nor do we want to on some level. But I think some of those forums offer some promise. But there's no substitute ultimately for getting out on the land ourselves, because if we wait for these international legal organizations to even rule in our favor, it'll be too late. The water will be gone. The water will be polluted, as in the case of in Guatemala, where they have that Marlin mine that's being run by Goldcorp. That water is basically undrinkable for the next 100 years. So
there was a recent article, at least I saw it last night here in the States, that they're asking people, how much fish do you eat? So that way they want to know if people are eating the fish from a particular body of water that's toxic. Well, we're not going to put too much money in that because no one's really eating that fish, but we'll take care of this particular water because people are eating that fish.
Exactly.
But yeah, we're going to take a break. But I just want to get this out though before we go into that break. That the professor is totally right when it comes to the issue of education as to what genocide is and what it isn't. It simply isn't lining people up against a wall. We have to move away from the German model of fascism in terms of defining what genocide is and actually read the law. Raphael Lemkin, who was a Polish, who was also Jewish. He was a solicitor, and he wrote the law and the actual breakdown on what genocide is and what it isn't. And basically, you don't have to kill anyone at all to perform a genocide.
Yeah.
You simply have to remove them from their culture, to change their language, to change their religion, to change how they dress, to change how they operate their family systems, their nuclear family systems. To remove them from any cultural understanding as to who they are. So when we hear kill the Indian but save the man, you understand what genocide entails. And what happened with the Nazis, and to even a greater extent, if you want to believe the records of the Nazis, what happened to the Serbs in Eastern Europe, it was just mass murder. And we have to move past that in understanding exactly what genocide is and what it isn't. Because if we actually look at the letter of the law, the black letter of the law, the United States, Mexico, Canada, and a bunch of others I can mention are all guilty of genocide. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're speaking with Professor Jeff Korntassel, and we will be back. We are going to, at least I would like to, touch on the politics of Palestine that was just recognized by UNESCO. Well, within UNESCO, not within the UN itself, but within UNESCO as a legitimate state, and what this might mean for indigenous peoples around the world. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Este es Radio Insurgente, voz del Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. In Canada, medicinal use of marijuana is already legal. Now the Canadian government has announced that they will soon stop arresting marijuana smokers altogether. We can learn much from our neighbors to the north. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org.
Idle No More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution,
to honor indigenous sovereignty,
and protect the land and water
for generations to come.
Mexicans, South Americans, all indigenous people, get inspired,
take action,
and become a part of the solution.
It's my future,
your future,
our future.
We are the protectors of Mother Earth.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up
and protect our Earth.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Become idle no more.
Go on, chillin. That's what we're talk about. We need a little help. Can't do this y'all alone. Thank God for this. Lick. Jim Brown, y'all. Yes, this your evening. One more time. We the ask on the children for get up. Get into it. Get involved. All 100 children, when I have to come down here to the Gullah Geechee Nation, and so glad that 100 to tune in to we Gullah Geechee Rhythm Radio Station. 100 children know this your the head from the body of this your nation and the heart of we station. Queen Quest, come on, children. Get involved. Get involved. Get involved to the Gullah Geechee Sea Island Coalition, the sponsor of this year radio station. Honey, chillin', this year the We Show, Gullah Geechee, Rhythm Radio. Come on, y'all.
From north to south,
from east to west,
the folks who want the best, listen to
Internet Radio for smarter originals.
Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid from The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, and we're back with Professor Jeff Korntassel. I just want to, you know, jump into this really quick. Palestine was just recognized by UNESCO, and the U.S. was just, I believe, kicked out by UNESCO for not paying its tab. Not that it couldn't pay its tab, it just didn't want to pay its tab. It hasn't paid its UN bills for decades. The fact that they have been recognized by UNESCO, it is a step. We don't really know what the real government is in Palestine. We have Abbas, who almost nobody voted for, and then you have Hamas, which nobody particularly likes, but who they voted for, but wasn't allowed to take office after they were told to get political and did so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, looking at that as a model and being at Palestine is pretty much in a lot of ways the same position that we are in. And mm-hmm. they have enough political sense to mention this when they make international arguments. So, speaking of Canada alone, and let's say that the movement that is happening right now in New Brunswick to defend their land and water and their people, what does that example on the international arena present to Indigenous people and to other colonialized and oppressed peoples into how we could possibly redefine our sense of statehood to deal with how the world is at this geopolitical moment?
That's a great question. I think the danger that I see with Palestine being recognized is that, you know, be careful what you wish for, mm-hmm. because the state system itself is corrupt, right? So, you know, are you going to mirror the corruption of that state system by being a part of it? And so I think it's important, though, in the sense of if that's what's needed to create autonomy for your people, and that if that's what's needed to basically protect your territory and protect your culture, then yeah, you need to follow that. And in that case, in the case of Palestine, we see that long history of struggle, right? Just to protect themselves and to protect from genocide. So I think it presents an interesting model. I don't think a lot of Indigenous folks want that per se, just because it comes with a lot of baggage. It means that you're not necessarily going to be treated as an equal on the world stage, even if you're recognized as a state. And then the other side is, you know, the question of size. You know, if we're talking about a community of 800 to 1,000 people, you won't even be allowed to be recognized as a country,
mm-hmm.
Let alone as a viable entity. So I think for a lot of folks, it creates an opening in terms of that recognition. But with that recognition comes a lot of downsides too. So I think a lot of Indigenous folks want a kind of what Vine Deloria Jr. called a cultural leave us alone agreement. Just leave us alone and you know, let us have our territory to protect it, you know. And of course, that's wishful thinking in a lot of cases, but you're seeing what degree folks are willing to, you know, to take to protect their land and protect their water and protect their people. And so I think autonomy is something, or, you know, really even just recognizing or honoring our self-determining authority as Indigenous nations, which may include, you know, being a country at some point for some Indigenous peoples. That may be a viable option. But I think for the vast majority, I think it's about, protecting that land by any means necessary. So it raises a whole interesting issue about, that strategy of statehood.
One of the things that I would, you know, like people to consider is that I hear a lot of folk, you know, thought, well, I don't talk to Crow people. Why not? Well, you know, we've always been enemies. That was a long time ago, bro.
Yeah.
You know, see, that kind of thing, you can still hold on to who you are and right. still act as a nation, act as Indigenous people. We heard this debate with the Zapatistas in terms of Subcomandante Marcos, because we all know that he is not Indigenous, at least not, you know, by blood fully. But he right. is certainly with the people. He is certainly down there. And they have been consistently redefining the role of women in Indigenous societies and the role yeah. of blood quantum in terms of this particular issue. Do you have any final thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Zapatistas are pretty amazing in terms of what they've been able to do in the last, really, 20 years. They've been able to rebuild their communities. And like you were saying, the women are leading. You know, the women won that first revolution in 1993. They came up with those revolutionary laws, and they didn't just ask for communities to recognize them. They demanded it. And that's something that got lost with the media and with a lot of the world, is when they went and took those towns, those four towns in 1994, the women had already won the first revolution. And so I see it as a continuation of that, where they've created towns of good governance, you know, where people aren't overly bureaucratized. You take over on the council for, 2 to 3 months versus 2 to 3 years, right? And everyone has an obligation to take over as part of the governance. So it's shared. It's shared governance, and it's also, they're doing some great stuff with field schools. So I see a lot of positive things happening there. And like you said, it's not just Indigenous folks. So there's a way of creating solidarity that's worked there that I could see has real potential for all of us. So yeah, absolutely. They continue to be an inspiration.
Yeah, well, you know, I really want to see this work, and I want everyone to check this out. Nations Rising, nationsrising.org. I really want you to go check this out. You know, we've had this brother on the show before, and, you know, he is one of many in Canada that are working diligently to really effectively address this. I mean, look, I know everybody listens to the show and you hear me get mad, but, you know, getting angry doesn't really mean anything if you're not going to do anything with it. So, you know, let's take that anger and funnel it into, you know, productive and positive. And I'm not saying this for weaselly words, but let's do something. Let's do something. Let's let, you know, the people of New Brunswick have stood up. The least we can do is stand up with them and at least be open to this discussion. Professor Jeff Korntassel, thank you for being on. I also want you to check out his work at Jeff Korntassel, as one word, on Twitter. And again, check out nationsrising.org. All right, thank you, Professor, for being on.
Wado, thank you.
All right, Wado.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for that. And yeah, check out the website and see how you might fit in to the struggle. There's different campaigns and even just translating the statement of principles into your own Indigenous language. That's a form of support as well. So find ways to plug in. Use your talents.
All right, you heard the call, everyone. Let's answer it. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Stick around.
subject is called the Leviathan Spirit. Now, why are we doing this? Because I have just really feel from the Lord that I should teach it. This spirit, what does it do? I wrote down some of the things. I'm convinced it's the cause of divorce, tribal wars, church splits, family feuds, sibling rivalries, ministries breaking up. It is more responsible, I believe, than any other spirit. If you have in your bloodline any animus, any Native American blood, for instance, not all Native Americans worship the serpent or crocodile, many did, but you might want to renounce that and repent for that generational iniquity. If you are, perhaps you're Mexican, and you might have indigenous blood in you, or Mayan blood, those who may have Aztec blood anyway, you need to repent for the sin of animism before you begin to deal with this spirit, because it'll be very active in your bloodline. We know that some of the totem poles, even in the north of America, in the Virginias and places like that, would have the crocodile in their totem poles. So if in the totems there is a crocodile spirit, you can say that there could be a very strong spiritual leviathan operating in that area if it has not been dealt with as a territorial spirit.
This is Radio Anglo-Indian. Anglo-Indian radio for the fourth world.
My name is Benny Wenda. I'm an independent leader from West Papua, based in the United Kingdom. Today, I read the message from West Papua. I'm telling to you today that in West Papua, there is no freedom in peace and justice. Only killing, intimidation, torture, harassment committed by Indonesian military toward my people. Well, just simply, we want to independent. And there is, I also part of the eyewitness, what happened in my village. Indonesia bomb in my village. And my number of family was killed, and this is so my sentiment will grow up, and I telling the world. And Indonesia committed a crime humanity in West Papua. It's 100,000 already been killed. This is already investigated, but there is an investigation more than that. So that's why I telling the world. And why I'm here? Because Indonesia want to kill me, because simply leading peacefully demonstration with my people, with the raise our flag, and so that's why they put me in prison 25 years. But the end, they want to kill me, and I escape, and now in United Kingdom. This is the people of United Kingdom, British government, give freedom to me, and this freedom I used to tell to world what happening, what going on in West Papua. People in Europe, people in the United Kingdom, people in Australia, people in the Pacific, people in Africa, people in South America, please support. I need your help. There is no one can help, only you. Thank you very much.
Palestine is one of the most reported places in the world.
But there's still a lot of misinformation about the reality on the ground.
What much of the media fails to explain
is that since 1948, nearly 75% of the entire indigenous Palestinian population
have been forcibly driven off our land
to make room for the creation of the so-called State of Israel.
And we are denied the right to return to our homeland.
The remaining 25% of Palestinians live as second-class citizens in the State of Israel, or under a brutal military occupation in the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
While world powers fund and support Israel,
we,
the people of the world, in our millions,
support the Palestinian people's struggle for freedom and equal rights. If
I boycott Israeli goods,
it's because I oppose an illegal occupation.
Because I oppose racism. Because I oppose brutality towards the indigenous people of their land. I reject the notion that I am anti-Semitic.
I reject the notion I'm a self-hating Jew, simply because I oppose the idea of an exclusively Jewish state.
only one line of division.
It's not a line of division between Muslims and Jews.
It's not a line of division between Palestinians and Israelis.
It is a line of division.
It is a line of division.
It is a line of division between those who stand for the equality of all
and those who stand for the supremacy of some. Boycott apartheid.
Boycott Israel. Boycott apartheid.
Boycott Israel.
Boycott apartheid. Boycott Israel.
जब देखो तब फालतू चीजों पर पैसे खर्च करती रहती हो। अरे मेरे की चैरिटी खोल के रखी। इतना ही अगर तेरे को चैरिटी का शौक है तो जा अपने बाप चले।
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेकथ्रू की पहल।
This is Tim Robbins. Recently in Washington, both Democrats and Republicans in high levels of government, the military, and intelligence have risked their careers, their livelihoods, and in some cases their safety to bring information to light, to expose the lies, duplicity, and potential crimes of the Bush administration. These patriotic Americans are trying to tell us something. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your congressmember for an official investigation into the Bush administration.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This is APNS Public Radio.
En paredes de piedra, tumbas de mato. Libertad enterrada, que así te quiere. Los que gritan tu nombre te dan la muerte. Pero millones crecen y cada uno